Support for the Source Podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. You may have heard those news stories about a familiar corporate brand that's getting bought out by some private equity firm. There will be a lot of millions or even billions of dollars mentioned in that short little story, but there's so much more going on other than a magnificent transaction, because for many companies in these deals, this is the beginning of the end. There will likely be layoffs, benefits slashed, properties sold off, products becoming shabby. And it's happening in the healthcare industry, in the retail, nursing homes, apartment buildings, and newspapers and more. So how does this happen? How does it all work? And why is this allowed to happen when it is gutting the middle class and making everyone worse off? The story is told in the new book, These Are the Plunderers, How Private Equity Runs and Wrecks America. We're joined by the co-author, Gretchen Morgenson, a Pulitzer winning reporter, senior financial reporter for the NBC News Investigative Unit. And Gretchen Morgenson, welcome to The Source.
Thank you, Dave, for having me. Really glad to be here. You had a great introduction there. Wow.
Well, I mean, when I saw that this book was coming out, it leapt off the screen. It's like, this is what I've been waiting for, because, you know, I'm trying to read about this, but it is so hidden. And I'm so glad that you have taken the time to pierce the veil.
Well, you're so right about it being hidden. You know, when these takeovers occur of your local business, of your local donut shop, of your, you know, local hospital, it isn't really something that many people can notice or can even know, because it's hidden from view. These private equity firms, they don't put a sign out front of the hospital that says, hi, this hospital is now run by private equity. So it is kind of a stealth takeover of so much of the American economy that people are just really starting to wake up to it and wonder how it happened and what can be done.
So you make the case that everyone, unless you are, you know, one of the fund manager or an investor, that everyone else is going to be worse off because of this. This is hurting the middle class. This is hurting the American economy. So make that case.
Okay. So I describe it this way, Dave. It's a circle of pain that is very large. You have a very few, very elite, wealthy group of people who benefit from private equity. And let me first start by explaining how it works. A private equity firm gathers money from investors, in many cases, public pension funds. It takes that money and then buys companies with it. It hopes to improve the operations, that's what they say, by streamlining, making them more efficient. And then they hope to sell those companies to another buyer in about 5 years at a very big profit. That is the business model. So it is very short term in orientation. And so when you have these companies being purchased, they often use a tremendous amount of debt to make the purchase. The debt is levied on the company itself. It is not taken out by the private equity firm. So now you have a company that is struggling under a heavy debt load, that has higher expenses because of that. And you have the need to generate a huge profit in a sale 5 years from now. What does that translate into? Translates into laying people off. It translates into pension stripping. It translates into perhaps lower, expenses made in making the product. It translates into fewer nurses on the floor of the hospital, perhaps. So you can see how this process works and how it works for a very few number of people and hurts a very big number.
Because the private equity firm is only interested in having hands on this company for 5 years, they're also going to be delaying any sort of maintenance or investment into this company as well?
Absolutely. It's really all about the bottom line. And so, you know, my argument here is that it is really not sustainable to really only be concerned with the bottom line. You know, we have to have businesses that understand that they need to care about their customers, their workers, their pensioners. You know, it's not just about the bottom line, or it shouldn't be. And that leads to this kind of really capitalism on steroids is the way one person described it to me. And that's kind of true.
Well, you describe it in the book as asshole capitalism.
Well, I can't say that in you know, nice companies. So we'll stick with capitalism on steroids. And by the way, that was someone else's phrase, so I can't take credit for that. But, you know, Dave, not long ago, the firms would argue that they were benefiting the pensions that invest with them by generating higher returns for those pensions. And so they would say, look, we're helping pensioners because we're generating higher investment returns for the public pensions of, say, you know, Houston firefighters or CalSTRS or CalPERS, New York State Common Retirement Fund. But that has actually stopped happening. Academic research now shows that the returns of private equity are exactly the same, very similar to what you get when you buy an S&P 500 index fund.
But don't these managers, they get all these fees for running these investment funds, but also they're looking for performance bonuses. They have to beat 8% in order to get those bonuses.
Yeah, there's so many fees, Dave, and associated with private equity. And again, these are fees that you don't even see, that a regular person would be very hard-pressed to even identify. But let me give you an example of an especially pernicious fee structure that was going on for many, many years until the SEC started to crack down on this. Here's how it worked. So let's say you are a private equity firm, you buy a company. Part of that transaction involves a private equity firm member going on the board of the company to monitor it. And so the private equity firm charges the purchased company what's called a monitoring fee. Well, the monitoring fees had traditionally a 10-year trajectory. It was a contract that was signed by the purchased company to agreed to pay the private equity firm for 10 years for this monitoring fee to sort of give them advice on how to operate. Well, after they sell them 5 years later, there's 5 years left on that monitoring fee contract, and the company has to pay it. So it's essentially paying for monitoring or advice that they are not receiving. That is just one example of the kinds of really crazy fees that are involved in private equity deals.
We're taking a break. We're going to continue our discussion about the new book, These Are the Plunderers, How Private Equity Runs and Wrecks America. You can call in with a question or comment. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can also text us at that number, 833-877-8255. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from Big Sun Solar, committed to helping businesses strive towards energy independence and conservation. Solar is a great way for businesses to lower their carbon footprint. More at BigSunSolar.com/TPR.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the book, These Are the Plunderers, How Private Equity Runs and Wrecks America. We're joined by one of the co-authors, Gretchen Morgenson. You know, frequently there's a product that you used to buy all the time. It was like, you know, this is a good product. The label was good. Everything was good about it. suddenly it's not so good anymore. It's a little shabby. It's not being put together as well. The things that go into it or materials aren't that good. Is it likely that that company got bought out in a private equity firm and now they're having to, you know, gut the product and try and make as much money they can off that brand name that used to have quality associated to it?
Absolutely. There is every possibility that that's going on, Dave. And, you know, it happens in consumer areas. It happens in retailing, as you mentioned at the top of the show, all the jobs that have been lost in retailing. I mean, how many times have you gone into a store and couldn't find what you were looking for on the shelf? Or there was, you know, a leak in the roof and there was a bucket on the floor collecting water. And, you know, again, this is a similar situation that you see with the private equity takeover. They are so obsessively focused on profits and creating increased profits that they do whatever they can to, you know, diminish the costs. Now, the biggest cost for most businesses is labor. And so that's where you have so many people being hurt, the job losses. Then you also have companies that have had very good pension funds, contributions for their employees. Those often get gutted. So it doesn't just hit the product, but it does hit the consumer for sure. And in a situation like healthcare, you are talking about the difference between healthcare that's going to have the patient come first, put the patient ahead of profits, or you're going to have healthcare where profits come ahead of patients. And that's where it gets really scary.
The American Investment Council, as you're right, as a U.S., a main U.S. organization lobbying, advocating for private equity, they're saying they create jobs. They're saying they're improving healthcare, that they're doing all sorts of good things. And the reason why so many of these companies go bankrupt after they take over is because they're taking over troubled companies to improve them.
Yeah, these are very interesting responses. And of course, I was very intrigued to hear what both the American Investment Council, which is the lobbying organization for private equity, but also the private equity firms that we highlight in the book. I asked them for their opinions, for their views. Of course, they all disagreed with the thesis of the book that private equity is harming the vast majority of people it touches and helping just a few. One interesting thing about the job creation claim is that Blackstone, which is one of the most prestigious private equity firms, it's run by a fellow named Steve Schwarzman, who received compensation last year of $1.2 billion, that's with a B. So Blackstone said to me, look, we have created jobs with our portfolio companies. In fact, over the past 15 years, we've created 200,000 jobs. And I said, wow, that's fantastic. I would love to see the data that supports that, where these jobs were created, which portfolio companies, et cetera. It would be great to be able to report that. And they declined to provide that information. So you really have a situation where you often hear these claims, but when you try to verify them, it becomes really difficult.
You're right about a town, New Madrid, Missouri. What happened there?
Wow, that is such a sad story. Okay, so this is a town, very small town in the Boot Hill region of Missouri, which is the southeastern portion of the state. And it had a crown jewel of a business on the shores of the Mississippi River. It had a huge aluminum smelter that ran for many years very well, profitably, that employed the vast majority of people in the town, provided them with great jobs, with pensions. This was a humming resource for the town. Of course, a huge part of the tax base came from this smelter. Well, Apollo Global Management, one of the big private equity firms, waltzed in and bought the smelter and then did the usual dance, which is to pile the debt on top of the company. While they were doing that, they withdrew cash from the company. They started to do again the reduction in employee benefits. And by the time they were finished, they had made three times their money on the company. But the company, the smelter, was bankrupt. The people were out of work. Even the school children in the small town were harmed because the school system lost a tremendous amount of revenues that the company typically paid to keep teachers employed and paid, books in the classrooms, et cetera. So it was it's really a perfect example of how this really harms many, many people and enriched a very small number.
So the question that you bring it up in the book, and it really rung, like this is important. People need to think about this. Why do public pensions invest so heavily in private equity when these things happen with that money, that it hurts the workers, it hurts the people that are actually putting money into these public pensions?
Absolutely. I mean, the case that we were just talking about in Missouri, that bankruptcy bankrupted three different pensions, had to be bailed out by the PBGC, which is the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. So yes, this is the $65 trillion question, Dave. Why would a pension fund invest in a business model that is unsustainable, that slashes jobs, a business model that harms pensioners, that enriches billionaires? I mean, it really is the question. And what they have said in the past as a response to the question is, well, look, we were making better returns from these holdings. We were generating more than we would if we were in the stock market or the bond market. But as I said earlier, that is no longer the case. And so it is a mystery to me why pensions still continue to pour money into these firms and into their funds. I mean, to me, it is so obvious that they could do better for their pensioners if they were looking elsewhere. I mean, the stock market alone has done better for many people. So that is really the question. And every time I try to ask a pension fund about this, for instance, CalPERS or CalSTRS, I don't get an answer. Really, the best they can do is the returns have been better.
And that's the California pension fund, which a lot of other pension funds will follow.
Correct. And they have gone very heavily into private equity. I mean, we have a situation right now where a private equity firm, again, it's Blackstone, owns a company that cleans slaughterhouses. You might have heard about this situation. And that portfolio company the Department of Labor has said that they have hired children to clean the slaughterhouses. And so here you have a situation where children are cleaning slaughterhouses. Why would a pension fund want to invest with a firm that has that kind of a problem on its hands?
Are these companies, as they cut cost, are they also doing more harm to the environment?
Very interesting question, Dave. Yes, is the quick answer. When you look around, you have a lot of pressure on, public companies, on public investment firms to jettison their fossil fuel ownership, or at least to try to go green and to, you know, be a better global citizen as far as the planet is concerned. But private equity firms are really all in on buying up those same fossil fuel operations that other companies have decided to get rid of. And so what really is happening is that the private equity firms are extending the life of these operations beyond a point at which they might have been mothballed. And so, you know, experts in the field who cover energy and the environment, they do say that private equity continues down this path because they're so short-term oriented. They don't mind extracting the last, you know, couple of nickels and dimes out of a polluting operation as long as they can glean a profit from it.
What can you tell us more about this observation that private equity-run nursing homes have the people who are there are more likely to have an early death?
This was an amazing academic research paper, and I spoke with the lead writer on it, and she was shocked to tell me that the outcome was with this was this 10% greater mortality rate at private equity-owned nursing homes than at nursing homes owned by other entities, even for-profit entities. So her name is Sabrina Howell. She's at NYU, and she was shocked, she said, with this result. But she said, you know, this is something that we really need to look at, because when you have companies that are solely interested in profits, when you have them running things that are sort of for the greater good, these are nursing homes are entities that are not supposed to perhaps be so profit-oriented. And that's when we have to worry, she said, about private equity getting involved. Now, we do know that at least 11% of nursing homes in this country are owned by private equity. And that could be a low number because, again, they're shrouded in secrecy. They're cloaked. We don't know who many of the owners are. But we do know that at least 11% are owned by private equity.
And COVID made things even worse.
COVID made things even worse. In fact, in the book, there's a passage where I spoke with some loved ones of residents of California nursing homes that were owned by a private equity company. And they were just very alarmed when they learned that the nursing home was bringing in COVID patients as a way to generate revenues, but they felt they were threatening the existing residents of the nursing home, obviously extremely vulnerable people who were, you know, going to be even more likely to get COVID. And this, in fact, was something that happened to one of the women that I spoke with. Her aunt did pass away from COVID after the nursing home accepted these COVID patients in.
We have to say goodbye to Gretchen Morgenson for this half hour. Thank you so much for joining us. And we're going to continue the conversation with her co-author coming back. Gretchen, thank you so much for writing this book, and thank you for talking to us today.
Anytime. I really, really appreciate your very, very incisive questions. And thanks for your interest, Dave.
Well, this is a great book, and everyone should read it. We're going to take a break, and our phone lines are open. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR, TPR Talk. So we were describing the problem. Coming back, we want to try and get, like, how does this happen, and what can be done to address this? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're continuing our discussion about the new book, These Are the Plunderers, How Private Equity Runs and Wrecks America. We're joined by the other co-author, Joshua Rosner. And Joshua, welcome to The Source. It's great to have you.
Great to be here. Thanks for inviting me, Dave.
So keeping people in the dark about private equity, how it works, where does the money go, all those things, is that part of the business model?
Well, I mean, historically, I don't know that it was intended to be part of the business model. It certainly has become part of the business model, and there's some rational basis. At the end of the day, historically, to be an investor in these, you would have to be a qualified institutional buyer. In other words, you'd have to be an accredited high net worth individual or an institutional investor. And so by nature, that allows them to avoid a lot of the SEC filing and disclosure requirements, a lot of the public information disclosures. And so it has remained largely in the dark as they've really consolidated the large swaths of our economy.
That's basically a carve out, an exception that's been created for these firms so they don't have to do a lot of reporting. But that could be changed.
That could be changed, and, you know, frankly, I think there's strong arguments for it to be changed, especially since, as Gretchen was explaining, these are firms that are managing individuals' pension and retirement accounts and their annuities. And so at the end of the day, even though it is no longer self-directed pension investment, it is still individuals' retirement funds. And the public should actually have that information. And yes, I think that there is a way to change that carve out, but we haven't really seen the regulators do that. In fact, what we've seen, certainly under the Trump administration, was a move to allow these firms to choose to market to retail investors.
There was the stop the Wall Street Looting Act of 2021. Didn't go anywhere, but is that just the first bite at it and trying to do more later?
Well, I mean, I think there are so many different ways to address this. I think first you're going to have a regulatory environment where the regulators are digging in. And I think we need the public to become more aware and start making demands. You know, it's interesting. We were talking with someone last week, Gretchen and I, and ask them about their own doctor. You know, most people don't even know whether their doctor is ultimately running or tied to a practice that is private equity owned. And that really changes the outcomes. I think we all know people who in recent years have had their doctors tell them, as example, dermatologists, that they need to have something removed from their face because they have something that could be skin cancer. What you're finding is that there's a lot of pressure by private equity-owned dermatological practices to increase the billings, to pay for keeping the lights on. And so you're seeing a lot more of unnecessary billings happening, procedures done, which ultimately not only affects that person specifically with having something removed from their skin, but it increases the cost of health care around the country. And so I think we need a population to become more aware, ask the questions, because that's really what's going to drive change, both in the regulatory and legislative communities.
Is organized labor playing a role in trying to hold private equity accountable?
Yes. I think there's no question that organized labor is doing the best it can. Obviously, we've seen the labor movement hollowed out over the past 40 years, and I think that's actually part of the problem, is that we don't really have the counterbalance that we deserve and once had to make those demands. But labor is certainly trying, but part of the problem is we've got more and more employees in this country who are tied to stock-based compensation with their employers. And so oftentimes they think that the stock price going up is necessarily good for them. And the reality is that oftentimes what you find is more layoffs actually increase the stock price. So we sometimes have the public rooting against itself, and that includes the unions.
So it does seem like these private equity firms are using bankruptcies as a business strategy in order to profit from them. That says they want to bankrupt their own companies for some reason. Do we need to change bankruptcy laws?
Well, I don't know that I would say that they want to use bankruptcy. I think what I would say is bankruptcy is a viable option on an a la carte menu. And So it obviously is, you know, quite often used as a way of securing the remaining assets and resolving the troubled assets. I think that bankruptcy obviously is an outcome that, while it could be good for secured creditors, obviously still doesn't provide the protections to the public. And I don't really see a particular change in bankruptcy that could target private equity without having unintended consequences. And that's one of the real problems with all of this, even in terms of the legislation. If you were to craft legislation about a particular industry, let's say oil and gas or healthcare or education, it becomes very hard to target one class of owners or investors without targeting the ultimate industry. And so that's part of the reason that legislators have been sort of, even the ones who want to do something proactively to address these problems, have had problems doing so.
So your book reminds me a lot of Bartlett and Steele's America, What Went Wrong. It talked about, you know, during the 80s, how those corporate raiders were able to pick apart America and offshore so many jobs in the Rust Belt, as we call it. And but in many ways, your book is prophetic. It is talking about this problem that we're having and how it's only going to get worse. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I do think it's going to get worse, and I think, frankly, one of the points that we're hoping people realize is, on the one hand, the good news is that the private equity industry is starting to run out of targets to ravage. We went from that 80s, early 90s period where they were actually really just taking over companies with the focus of streamlining them so they could re-IPO them to get better multiples or valuations in the public market. So that was really an arbitrage strategy. And that's grown and metastasized into, they've run out of targets. And so now what they're doing is they're going after industries that were really never, as I know Gretchen was talking about, supposed to be focused on maximizing profits because they've got a public purpose. So we think of electric utilities as, you know, no matter the economic cycle, everyone pays the same rate. It serves a purpose so everyone can have their home heated. And the lights go on in good times and in bad times. Those type of industries would include healthcare, would include utilities, sewer, water.
These public goods.
The public goods. And the fact that private equity is really targeting those, even though they are politically sensitive, really suggests that those are the last fat opportunities for them. And they're at, you know, the terminus of this model, which is part of the reason that over the past few years we've seen more and more of the large private equity firms buy insurance companies so that they actually have a place to stick the assets and to purchase and fund the assets. So they're definitely running out of room. And in fact, in some ways, we're heading back to the beginning of the cycle, which is, at the beginning of our book, the executive life cycle. But yes, this is a troubling warning about what's to come, because, again, once you end up with insurance companies who are buying troubled PE deals with the goal of, you know, rolling the dice so that people have their pensions fully funded by the time they retire, if that doesn't happen, we will have something more of a systemic event at hand, which will be, you know, from or at the feet of private equity.
Now, there does seem to be tax loopholes that enable private equity to do what it does, a carried interest tax loophole. They seem to a lower capital gains rate, apparently. So can that be changed?
Well, it can be changed, but again, the carried interest really doesn't affect the business. It just affects the owners of the business, the principals of the business, because it's not the private equity firm that benefits from it. It's the partners, the owners of the private equity firm, who personally benefit from that. So it's not really clear that cutting the carried interest loophole would change their behaviors in a way that would really ameliorate some of the risks that they're creating. It certainly would go a long way to minting fewer private equity billionaires.
Well, but is the tax situation, does it enable, are there other areas that need to be looked at? I mean, it does seem like this is, there's something here that's not right.
There's something here that's not right, but I think that's actually part of the problem with our whole system at this point. Look, there's nothing inherently wrong with private equity, and there is an opportunity for private equity to be done correctly, and that really is an alignment of interests between stakeholders and the companies, and that really speaks to incentivizing at the governmental level equity rather than debt.
All right, second of the break. Our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. When we come back, I want to circle back to try to talk about how private equity is impacting people's lives directly. And if you have been impacted, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me on the line, Joshua Rosner is a financial policy analyst, managing director at the independent research consultancy Graham Fisher and Company, co-author of the book, These Are the Plunderers, How Private Equity Runs and Wrecks America. And you can call in. You got a question or comment, 833-877-8255. Joshua, I want to talk about like newspapers. I know you don't really get into it into the book, but you know, there's been research that shows that private equity firms have been buying up America's newspapers, and their pattern is to lay off reporters and shrink the size of newspapers. Studies have shown that the overall number of articles fell by about 17% when a private equity firm bought a newspaper, and we've seen it basically, you know, do less in order to increase the profits for the companies that own the hold the private equity bonds. So is that a concern?
Well, of course that's a concern, especially since, you know, those are in many cases the major source historically of local information within a community. And first area that we end up seeing gut is usually not the, you know, daily reporting, the crime tracking, the local interest stories. It often is the investigative units within those communities which are the areas that would be acutely focused on some of the local impacts that business is having on the community. It's a massive concern. In fact, I think we're seeing that throughout the news industry, there's less focus on real news and more of it's tied to eyeballs, clicks, and advertising. And I think that really is part of the problem that we're seeing is private equity driven in the information and public awareness that's going on.
We're seeing rising interest rates. They're saying on Wall Street it's the end of free or cheap money, quantitative easing being pulled back, all these other things. You know, Wall Street, they get all the bailouts. Is that if we end you know, higher interest rates, is that going to have an impact on what happens with the people who invest in private equity?
Well, it already is having an impact. We're seeing private equity firms having a harder and harder time raising capital for new funds. And so I think it already is. Now, they're sitting on, as institutions, quite a lot of, you know, what we call dry powder. But in terms of their ability to raise new funds for new investment vehicles, we're already seeing it have an impact. And obviously, returns have to be risk adjusted. And so the higher rates mean that you need to have proportionally higher returns. And I think that that's a setup for either swinging for the fences or underperforming, as Gretchen's pointed out, they've already been doing if you were to net fees, et cetera.
Let's go to a caller. We have Caroline on the line. And Caroline, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. I just wanted some clarity. It sounds like what you're discussing is leverage buyout. And from what I understand, it's similar to what a Mormon candidate, presidential candidate, a few years back was maybe criticized for. And that's going in as an investor with a group, as investors, purchasing companies, taking out a bank loan, paying themselves, and then putting the debt on the companies and then getting out in 5 to 7 years. Is that what we're discussing?
Caroline, thank you for the call. Let's go to our, Joshua.
Yeah, I mean, that generally is the business model that we're talking about and have concerns about. Again, there are ways that you can align the interests of stakeholders and the companies, and that really goes to the amount of debt you employ and whether you are actually going to keep your equity commitment within the company as the purchaser, as the leveraged buyout purchaser, or if you're looking to extract what equity investments you've made in the company as quickly as possible to maximize your returns for yourself and your investors. And so, again, it's not the business model itself that is problematic. It's the business model as all too frequently employed that's the problem, and that is about the debt and the burdening a otherwise viable company with large amounts of debt that are unsustainable while you're extracting the equity and the assets for yourself and for your stakeholders.
So another caller, Tom. And, Tom, you're on the air.
I was actually calling to say how much I agree. I had my own healthcare business, and I had it for 20 years, and I sold it to private equity, and I had to stay on for a while to help them. But I noticed very quickly that they sacrificed long-term gains for that company for short-term profits. And the biggest thing I noticed, it really hurted the quality of the patient care with them just trying to make a quick buck. I remember telling them a number of times, you're going to ruin this business long-term if you continue doing this kind of work. You need to look at the long-term gain and focus on patient care instead of making the quick buck.
And what'd they tell you?
Said, no, we need to make the money. We want, these are the numbers. We need them done within the next 2 months. Forget the five-year plan. It was all about what can be done in the next 6 months.
All right, Tom, thank you for that call. I really appreciate that. Joshua, your reaction?
Yeah, no, I appreciate the caller. I appreciate the call. And again, that focus on maximizing profits for the company's short term ultimately costs all of us with rising costs of healthcare in the long term. Because if patient care suffers, so too do costs go up as those patients end up with worse medical conditions, worse outcomes, and in care of more critical and urgent care. And so, you know, I think we all have an interest in making sure that these short-term focused gains are managed and overseen.
Okay, here's the part I don't understand. So the business model is you buy the company, and then in 5 years later, you want to sell it again and make a profit. But in the process, you're gutting the company and you're making it worse. How do you sell it for a profit after you've wrecked it?
Well, it's an either or. If we are unable to extract our wealth quickly, the assets, the equity quickly, then we'll sell it in 5 years. If we get our money back, then it doesn't really matter what happens in 5 years. And I think that's part of the problem is it is, as some have noted about other areas of our financial system today, a heads I win, tails you lose outcome. And that's the problem is it's not binary for these firms. It tends to be a both and rather than an either or. And so when you were talking earlier about, you know, the bankrupting of these companies as the goal, it's actually just an option. It isn't necessarily the goal, and it's dependent upon their success or their failure in getting their money out first and otherwise.
So they're flipping these companies. And we've heard about house flippers, but, you know, a house flipper will try to improve the house when they sell it off. I mean, is it they go into these, it's like buying a house, and instead of making improvements, they say, hey, these fixtures are really nice, I'm going to rip them out and I'll put in some cheaper fixtures, and these countertops, I'm going to put in some awful countertops and I'll keep the good ones and then try and sell it for more?
Yeah, that's actually a very good example. But remember, sell it for more doesn't necessarily have to be more than I paid nominally. It has to be more than I paid net of what I've extracted from the company already. So you can essentially allow the house to fall into disrepair because you extracted the lighting and the pipes and the other assets and fixtures. And if you actually had got enough value for the extraction of those and the sale of those, then the price at which you're selling the company doesn't have to be more than you paid for it. It needs to be more than you netted from it.
Right? So if they buy a company like Victoria's Secrets, and then they say, okay, we're going to sell off some of their other brands. They have another brand called Pink or something, and they sell that off. And then they have all this real estate. Let's sell that off, and let's switch to these crappier, less good products. Is that their model?
Yeah, and so essentially the ultimate sale can be, we've gotten all these money for the sale of those other businesses. Now we can sell the goodwill of the name itself, and whatever we get for that is icing on the cake.
So where is that going to leave us?
Well, it's already leaving us with a hollowed out economy, with overly conglomerated and consolidated industries. And unfortunately, it leads us to, these are long cycles of corporations aggregating and disaggregating. And so in the 60s, the model was to put together seemingly disparate businesses into larger and larger conglomerates. By the 80s, the goal was to deconglomerate and sell off the businesses and LBO them and strip the assets away. And now we're heading back towards the terminus of the model.
Do you think making consumers more aware that all of this is happening behind the shadows, in the shadows, that we're going to do something about it?
Yeah, I do. I think that if everyone was aware and asked themselves or challenged themselves to find out if the companies that they rely on every day are owned by private equity, and they therefore looked into the practices of those firms and their responsibility as consumers for supporting those business models, that would drive change. If I could wave a magic wand and say that every company that was private equity owned had to say, Victoria's Secret, a private equity owned company, that would be wonderful. But unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. The consumers need to do a little bit of work for themselves if they're going to change these practices.
Or we could change the law and make them declare, make them register with the SEC. Joshua Rosner is the co-author of the book, These Are the Plunderers, How Private Equity Runs and Wrecks America. Joshua, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us today.
Thank you so much for having me, David. It was a pleasure.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
Has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kaylee Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.